Okay, Purport. In commenting on the cleansing of the Khandicha temple, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was personally giving instructions on how one should receive Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, within one's cleansed and pacified heart. If one wants to see Krishna seated in his heart, he must first cleanse the heart, as prescribed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshashtaka, Cheto Dharpana Marjanam. In this age, everyone's heart is unclean, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Hridayanta Storya Bhadrani. To wash all dirty things accumulated within the heart, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised everyone to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. The first result will be that the heart is cleansed, Cheto Dharpana Marjanam. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.17 also confirms this statement, Srimvatam Swakata Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtana, Radiantasto Hyabhadrani Vidunoti Saritsatam. Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, Supersoul, in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who relishes his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. If the devotee at all wants to cleanse his heart, he must chant and hear the glories of the Lord. Sri Krishna, Srimvatam Swakata Krishna, this is a simple process. Krishna himself will help cleanse the heart because he is already seated there. Krishna wants to continue living within the heart, and the Lord wants to give directions, but one has to keep his heart as clean as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept the Khandicha temple. The devotee therefore has to cleanse his heart just as the Lord, in this way, one can be pacified and enriched in devotional service. If the heart is filled with straw, grains of sand, weeds or dust, in other words, anyabilasita purna, one cannot enthrone the Supreme Personality of Godhead there. The heart must be cleansed of all material motives brought about through fruitive work, speculative knowledge, the mystic yoga system, and so many other forms of so-called meditation. The heart must be cleansed without ulterior motive. As Srila Rupa Goswami says, anyabilasita shunyam jnana karmadnavritam. In other words, there should not be any external motive. One should not attempt material upliftment, understanding the Supreme, by speculative knowledge, fruitive activity, severe austerity and penance, and so on. All these activities are against the natural growth of spontaneous love of Godhead. As soon as these are present within the heart should be understood to be unclean and therefore unfit to serve as Krishna's sitting place. We cannot perceive the Lord's presence in our hearts unless our hearts are cleansed. A material desire is explained as a desire to enjoy the material world to its fullest extent. In modern language, this is called economic development. An inordinate desire for economic development is considered to be like straws and grains of sand within the heart. If one is overly engaged in material activity, the heart will always remain disturbed. As stated by Narottam Das Thakur, Samsara Visanale, Dwyanishi Hiya Dwale, Jwale, Judaite Naikainu Upai. In other words, endeavor for material opulence is against the principle of devotional service. Material enjoyment includes activities such as great sacrifices for auspicious activity, charity, austerity, elevation to the higher planetary system, and even living happily within this material world. I knew you'd like that last sentence. So let's discuss. Omegyanatamarandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshur militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam tadati swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Karun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakuchatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Twam Sijivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Virjana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, interesting purple. Prabhupada is really quite strongly knocking out everything in this purple. Maybe we'll begin by giving some context. So this chapter, as we said, is entitled The Cleansing of the Gandicha Temple. Earlier in this chapter, King Pratapruda, he wanted to have the association of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya had refused, and he was actually saying, you know, if I do this, what will people say? I'm a sannyasi, etc. The king, not giving up easily, he then approaches the associates of the Lord and asks them basically to pull a good word in for him. The Lord agrees, the Lord agrees to meet his son. And actually, Lord Chaitanya embraces the king's son. And the king's son reminds Lord Chaitanya of Krishna, which is good opulence to have, right? So Lord Chaitanya embraces the king's son. The king's son goes into ecstasy. The king then embraces his son. He goes into ecstasy. The king is also given some artifact, one of the Lord Chaitanya's cloth. And then he worships it as if he were in the worship or association of Lord Chaitanya himself. And then we come to this pastime of the cleaning of the Gandicha temple. And the cleaning of the Gandicha temple has great value to us as Vaishnavas because it is symbolic of this process of cleansing the heart. And it's explained early in the verses that they have 100 brooms, right? So a servant has given Lord Chaitanya and his associates 100 brooms. They also have these pots. And these pots are full of water. And so there's two cleanings. Bahir Marjanam. The first cleansing is considered the external cleansing. So many things are removed even in this area in this section. These points are being made or in these verses about the straw. Let's see the actual verse 1-8. Yeah, it talks about how Lord Chaitanya, he picks up, so verse 131, he's picking up the all kinds of straw, grains of sand, and dirty things. So, Bahir Marjanam, the first cleansing is considered the outer cleansing. So that relates to or symbolizes the giving up of gross anattas. So there are so many things that we follow in Krishna consciousness. We let go of so many things. And often those things are very, very external. But there's another round of cleaning that takes place, Antar Marjanam, which is the internal cleansing, which is done by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. And that internal cleansing is the more, is the more subtle work that as devotees that we have to do. And there is, of course, a connection between both of these things. There's a connection between the external cleansing and the internal cleansing. The connection is that one is the root cause of the other. One causes the other. So from the subtle manifests the gross. So we retrace back that entire process by letting go of something which is gross and then coming in to remove the ultimate cause of it. And that is the vision, the symbolism that is here. And it's interesting because we can take from this pastime so many lessons, because this cleansing also very greatly symbolizes that particular stage of devotional of the devotional process. And that stage is this anatta nivritti. We are trying to remove these anattas. Arta means wanted. When you put the prefix before it, an, it changes the meaning, anatta. Prabhupada even talks in this purport here about economic development, which is arta. Dharma, arta, karma, moksha, arta. So anatta, that which is unwanted. And of course, the challenge that we all have is that in the material world, we want the unwanted. That's our challenge. So there are three key lessons that we can take from this pastime that can help us move through this stage of anatta nivritti. The first lesson that we must consider as devotees is that our ruchi has to be redefined. What is the root cause of our holding on to anattas? The root cause of our holding on to anattas is that we're looking for something. We're looking for some kind of taste, some kind of pleasure. So if you look at the movies, the movies which get the most views, usually two themes in the movies, right? Sex and violence. Okay, so why is that a theme that people are so interested in? If we take it a step beneath that, if we go from the gross to the subtle, behind sex and violence, what is violence? Violence is a desire to control. Right? What is sex? Sex is a desire to enjoy. Have we heard that before? Right? The living entity wants to control and enjoy. If we go a step deeper, why do I want to control? What is the meaning of my desire to control? In this material world, at every moment, on a conscious or unconscious level, we feel threatened by the environment. We feel there is some kind of threat in this environment, some threat to my survival. And because of this bhaya, this fear of the environment, therefore, in order to try to mitigate the fear, I want to be in charge, right? I want to control. So we say control and enjoy. Jai Shushi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Shushi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Shushi Gonitai Guru Pramparati. Shri Prabhupada Tulsi Maharam Ki Jai. So when we go a step deeper, behind my control is actually the fear. But why am I fearful? I'm fearful because of a lack of realization of my true nature. Behind that desire to control is the fear. Fear that the environment is hostile and the environment can take away my existence. Why do I fear this environment can take away my existence? Because I've not yet realized that I'm sat. I lack a realization that I'm eternal. Right? And this desire for enjoyment, why do I want to enjoy this material world? Because I failed to realize that actually I'm eternally blissful, ananda. So whenever we go from the gross, you dig into it, you come back to the subtle. And when we go beyond the subtle, we dig into it, we come to the spiritual. Therefore, our ruchi has to be redefined. We have to understand this is the root cause of all the economic development and everything else. We have to redefine our ruchi. Anatta nivritti cannot be given up to the extent that one has not redefined their ruchi. It cannot be given up unless we redefine what is truly going to satisfy me. Behind everything that we do is an ideology. Why am I buying this particular product? Because I feel it's going to give me something. If I did not think it's going to give me something, I don't have to mess with it, right? There's no need to interact with it. So whatever it is that we're looking for, whatever it is that we're pursuing materially, we can just ask ourselves, what am I looking for within that particular thing? If someone told you that I'm going to make you a millionaire, there's many millionaires, let's say billionaire, I'm going to make you a billionaire. Just one slight caveat. You have to sign this disclaimer. The disclaimer is that you can't do anything with the money, you can't enjoy it. No one's going to sign up, isn't it? It's not the money. It's what the money means to you. So in every situation, if we are able to redefine our ruchi, it makes for a tremendous shift in our spiritual life. Because this promise of pleasure is so powerful that it impels every single living entity to move, act, and live in a particular way. It's the promise of pleasure. So what redefines our ruchi? There's a few things that redefine our ruchi. The first thing that redefines our ruchi is the teachings. The teachings work in an amazingly scientific way. So on one level, you could say the teachings tell you what you should and shouldn't do. Yes, that's true on one level. There's another way of looking at the teachings of Krishna consciousness. Another way of looking at the teachings of Krishna consciousness is it is a complete description of reality. In other words, it shows you can do anything you like. You can do anything. But the long-term outcome of what you're doing, I should give you that understanding. And then you can make a decision based upon an end-to-end understanding. You see, this is actually how it's working scientifically. You can do anything you want, absolutely anything. See, people don't like religion. Generally, one of the main reasons why people don't like religion is that they feel religion's going to stop them having fun. You notice that? Right? Oh my God, you're religious. The first question is, oh, you're not allowed to do this, are you? You ever notice that? People talk to you like that? You know, you're religious. You can't have a good time, right? You know, are you allowed to have fun? That's what they really mean, right? You're allowed to have fun. This is why the ruchi has to be redefined. Actually, what is considered fun, what is considered pleasurable, is different according to one's perception and knowledge. And therefore, you'll find in Prabhupada's teachings again and again, he'll talk about the materialism, and he has this very wonderful statement. Because Prabhupada often speaks in sutras, right? He'll say something, it's just one sentence, but you can just unpack it forever. He will say that they have a poor fund of knowledge. He says it all the time. What does he mean by that? It means that they are drinking poison thinking that it's nectar. That's what he means. It is a lack of this end-to-end perception. You can do whatever you want. It's very beautiful. That spirit within the Shastra, that spirit reflects Krishna's own heart. Because he wants a free, loving relationship. So what he does for every living entity, every devotee, is he offers us. He doesn't force it upon us. This is also important. It's an offering. Here you have an end-to-end understanding. It allows you to see, just like a domino, right? There was years ago, there used to be this television, it wasn't even a television program. I remember seeing something and they had Guinness Book of Records. And they had this one time, there was this person and he was in the Guinness Book of Records for doing the longest domino effect or something like that. So he just tipped over one domino and it hits another one. And you see this whole kind of huge, setup or arrangement. And the material world is exactly like that. It is like a set of dominoes. You can do whatever you want. But once you launch a particular activity, then the modes of material nature kick in to give you a certain outcome. And it is the difficulty that we all have, that we're attached. It's not as much that we're attached to the material world. We're actually attached to our conception of the material world. That's why the ruchi has to be redefined. We're attached to our idea. I can do this and I should be happy. Right? I can do this and it should make me happy. But what Krishna is doing through the pages of the teachings, the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's giving us a different understanding. Devyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Mame vaye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. He's saying, you can do whatever you want, but this divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature, you can do what you want, but you can't get out of it. Prabhupada, in this purport, he actually goes on to explain about the material world. He says, he's talking about the modern society. He actually explains in this same purport, he says, the material plans of the modern society cannot resolve the issues of the modern society. Very, very profound statement. Extremely profound. It means that within the life of every individual, if you want to solve something on one level, the most powerful, effective, and enduring solution is to deal with it from a higher level. My spiritual master sometimes gave this example. He said, how do you deal with a thief in your home? Right? Think about it. You have a thief in your home. How do you deal with it? Right? Now, as devotees, we could say ultimately you chant Hare Krishna, right? Good luck. Okay. But it does work on a transcendental level, absolutely. But on the more external level, he said the way you deal with a thief in your home is you just switch the lights on. The moment the thief knows that he's being exposed, everyone knows what's going on. He loses his ability to do anything. Right? So when you expose the situation, the Shastra is there to expose the situation. You can do whatever you want. But that behavior that you're doing, this is what it's going to lead to. I had a very, it was painful to the heart. I had a call with a devotee friend of mine who's based somewhere else. And he was in great distress. He was in great distress because of a situation that he was dealing with, and he was really upset about the situation, very emotional about the situation, and it was disturbing him so much. He said to me, I feel like just pulling, I just want to pack my deities and put them away. And I told him, don't put your deities away. Right? Do not put your deities away. And he went on to say, he said, Krishna's not helping me. He said, you know, I'm praying to Krishna and he's not helping me and I'm in this situation, this is happening, etc., etc. And, you know, it's tricky because, you know, when a devotee is in distress, there's two extremes, right? One extreme is that you tell them something philosophical, right? You know, you've seen devotees do this, right? You know, like literally emotional intelligence is in minus numbers, right? You know, someone's going through some distress. It's okay, it's your karma, Prabhu, right? You think that's going to solve the problem. So there's one extreme where there's absolutely no empathy. Right? No empathy at all, it's just very, very hardcore philosophy. The other extreme is that we actually lean into their maya. They're blaming Krishna. Yeah, actually, why didn't Krishna do anything for you? It's disgusting. You know, what kind of God is he? Also wrong. So I was trying to navigate, you know, the middle space, how to, first of all, show empathy. We understand it's a difficult situation you're in. Completely understand that. And at the same time, try to share something that may help the person to move forward. Right? Because in that particular situation, which I've seen again and again, actually that day, I'd had three calls from devotees all in some difficult situation. And it was so instructive. Why? Because it all related to this domino effect. It all related to situations where someone had done something, but they had not been cognizant of the long-term outcomes of their activity. Three very, very distinct cases. And you know what was so amazing? What was so amazing is that just within the pages of the Shastra, if one were able to see that situation through the eyes of Shastra, you could fully predict where each situation would end up, which was absolutely incredible. Again, this redefinition of ruchi. You can do whatever you want, But every activity has a reaction. Every action has a reaction. And once we kick, once we set up a certain action, where it ends up, that's determined by the laws of nature, not by us. If you look carefully at the modern society does not understand this at all. Therefore, we think we can do one thing, we can tweak one thing, and everything will work out. But what you find, if you look carefully, is every time we mess with Krishna's nature, every time we mess with Krishna's energy, even if you seemingly solve one issue, you create a few others. For example, we know from Ayurveda that if you spend all your day looking at computer screens or mobile screens, it increases the Vata dosha in your body, right? So what does that Vata dosha do? Krishna says, Bhumiapo nalavaya kamanabhuye devacha. He explains in the Bhagavad Gita there are these five elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. In Ayurveda, each dosha is made up of a combination of certain elements. Right? So kapha is water and earth. Okay, pitta is fire and water. Vata is air and ether. They're the most subtle elements. So when someone spends their whole life or spends so much of their time just watching screens, on their screens all the time, it actually increases the Vata. It helps it increases the likelihood that we as a society are more likely to be ungrounded. Has anyone noticed that there's more tendency nowadays for people to feel ungrounded? Anyone ever noticed that? Yeah. When the Vata's out of balance, it leads to anxiety, overthinking, stress, so many things. So We celebrate the modern achievements, but because we don't have this redefined ruchi, we don't have this shastric knowledge which can show you, you can do anything you want, but here is the full long-term results of it. Because our modern society doesn't see the end outcomes of every behavior, we do one thing, and what's so amazing, we do one thing, then we celebrate. We as a civilization, we've done so many amazing things. And then this other issue pops up. But because we don't have this shastric knowledge, we don't understand that this issue that's popping up, this issue is actually related to this. Right? We think it's, you know, what is it that people call it? When something happens that they can't understand, we say it's coincidence. You notice that? Anything the modern society doesn't understand, it was just bad luck. It was just a coincidence. So what happened? This is the result of a gross society. With a gross society, we only see cause and effect on the gross level. When a society becomes more advanced, then we understand not just the gross cause and effect, we understand the subtle cause and effect. We understand how subtle things cause the gross. And when the society is most advanced, we understand the spiritual, the subtle, and the gross, and we understand the relationship between all of them. So just as Lord Chaitanya is engaged in this cleaning is empowered if we redefine our ruchi. If we redefine what we understand will truly make us happy, and it can be redefined by the shastra, that's one way to redefine it, but it doesn't stop there. A question comes up in this internet age. Is it better to go to the temple to hear the class, or do I stay at home in my pajamas, right? Let's be honest, sometimes in bed, right? You know what goes on, and listen on the internet. Because after all, a class is a class, Prabhu, right? This is the understanding, right? You know, what's best, right? Internet sangha or temple sangha? It's a question we all have to ask ourselves in ISKCON, right? So this is very interesting. It is actually understood that it's better when someone is giving a class to be physically present. Okay? It is actually considered better when a class is being given, when devotees are giving class, when sadhus are giving a class, to actually come and be in their physical presence. Now, that doesn't mean that hearing classes at home or on the internet is bad. As long as the class is bona fide, there's benefit. But why is it? Why is it advised, and why is it that traditionally one would go and sit before the spiritual master and hear? There's a very, very good reason for this. And the reason is that actually it helps us to accelerate our devotion. This is the second point. Association accelerates anatta nivritti. Okay? For better or worse, actually. I repeat that. For better or worse, association accelerates anatta nivritti. What do I mean by that? When you're physically in the presence of devotees and you're hearing, what actually happens is that hearing has a different quality. Right? Why? Because when we are physically present and hearing in that way, it leaves a deeper impression on the mind. That's the point. It leaves a stronger impression on the heart. And so what's happening in each and every devotee's heart is that there's the strength of the material impressions on one side. And then there's the power and the strength of the spiritual impressions on the other side. And what we're trying to do as devotees, through the psychology of Krishna consciousness, because it is a psychology, through the psychology of Krishna consciousness, we're trying to make the bhakti samskars, the devotional samskars, as strong and as powerful as possible. And it is that act of making those devotional samskars as powerful as possible. That activity makes this journey through anatta nivritti easier. Association accelerates anatta nivritti. That's for the better. The other side is association accelerates anatta nivritti for the worse, meaning that your anatta nivritti can take longer. Right? Generally, because Prabhupada, when he came on the planet, he was establishing his movement 1965, he left in 1977. So he was giving what would be given to devotees at the beginning stages of their bhakti. But he put everything in his books. We can understand that people can also regress in this process. We can go backwards as well as forward. Right? So sometimes it's like that. You're trying to drive somewhere, but you get lost. And you find out after a while that actually you've regressed. Because the map was not followed properly. Right? I see this again and again within our tradition, within our movement, within our communities. There's the teaching and then there's the application of the teaching. We sometimes think that just because we're devotees, everything's going to be done for us automatically. Yes and no. What Krishna often does, and I was explaining this to this devotee who was going through something, because he was blaming Krishna, and I was trying to explain to him in a kind way that actually Krishna tries to help us, and one of the ways he tries to help us is through giving us good counsel. You see? So it's not just, you know, I'm praying to Krishna, Krishna will do the work for me, right? It's also that Krishna tries to give us good counsel. But if we don't listen, if we don't hear that good counsel, what can be done? And then whatever outcomes we have to deal with, it's so interesting. This point about Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, etc. The whole chain begins with the hearing. So good advice is offered, it's not forced. You see? But if we don't hear, there's a saying that if you don't hear, you have to feel. Right? That's the point. If you don't hear, we have to feel. So I was explaining to this devotee, because the situation he was in, to be honest, yeah, in some ways you could have seen it coming. And the point I was making to him said, actually, according to Shastra, the way you approach this situation was not the way that Shastra advises that this situation should be approached. You went into this situation, there should have been more time before committing to this situation. According to Shastra, you're meant to get blessings before you commit to the situation. You're meant to ask advice before you do it. You're meant to look for some particular signs before you move into the situation, all of which were not followed. And because those particular Shastric, those forms of Shastric advice, they weren't followed, that's why you're in the situation that you're in. So he's blaming Krishna after he's just jumped into a particular situation, but he's gone into the situation against the way that Krishna advises that one moves into that situation. And that happens again and again and again in the lives of devotees. So the application and the philosophy and the gap between the two things, that gap is where we have additional difficulties in our spiritual life. And when I say additional, I mean unnecessary. See, we sometimes get confused. We think that everything that happens to us is karma, right? But there's also the fact that sometimes we make choices that open the doors to additional difficulties. That means that a devotee can go through more challenges than he or she had to go through. Isn't that interesting? They can go through more challenges than they actually had to experience by not doing things in the way that Guru Sadhu Shastra advises. Not just that. In fact, that would be, for some of us, it's a higher level, right? Even below that, there's a level which often is missed. So we talk about not doing things in the way that Guru Sadhu Shastra advises, but the level below that is not even being cognizant that there's a recommended way to do things. Because if I'm not even aware that there's a recommended way to do things, there's no question of following. And this is why association comes through. Association accelerates anatta nivritti for the better if I have good association. And if I have bad association, I take on anatta. Right? If I have bad association, an anatta that I didn't have previously, hey, now it shows up within the confines of my heart. Right? I remember one devotee I know, when they were studying at university, they had a friend who was interested in Krishna consciousness. And they would talk to their friend, and their friend was really becoming favorable and wanted to practice. But then at a certain point, their friend started working. All of us, you know, generally many of the congregation, we work and so on, we have jobs. And this point comes up about association. But what happened was that person who was interested in Krishna consciousness, they were working with people who are not devotees. It happens every day. It doesn't have to be an issue. It became an issue because they then became receptive to the material values. So from being interested in Krishna consciousness, the interest started to move in a different direction. Right? Instead of being interested in Krishna, they became increasingly interested in the material energy. To the point that at a certain point, they started saying, you know what, this Krishna consciousness, it doesn't make sense to me. Right? Very interesting. Savasya chahamriti shanivishto matasmriti gyanam apohanam cha. We think that our understanding of Krishna consciousness is based upon our own endeavor only. Not exactly. Actually, it's based upon our sincere desire. You want to know about Krishna, therefore he's allowing you to know about him. Right? Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita 15:15, from me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. If you want to forget about Krishna, he'll facilitate it. Right? That's actually how it works. So if someone deep in the heart is like, you know what, I want to do something else. I want to live a different way. Right? I want to put myself or my sense gratification first over Krishna. He will give them opportunity, but at a certain point, if it's like you insist, okay, hey, it's your choice. So what was happening in that association of materially minded people, it wasn't the association so much, it was that the heart was open to it. The heart was open to it. Therefore, anattas became energized, and therefore the person eventually stopped practicing Krishna consciousness. And I've even seen devotees who were serving at the temple. After a while, without association, the entire process. One devotee I know in particular was serving at this temple. Right? He's not in the. I don't think he's in the country right now. I think he's abroad. And I remember at a certain point, I think he actually told it to a friend of ours. He said, oh, "This just doesn't make any sense to me. This Krishna consciousness just doesn't make any sense." And I was thinking, yeah, that's what happens if one allows the material association within the heart. So the ruchi has to be redefined, and association accelerates anatta nivritti, the movement through anatta nivritti. The third factor we have to understand is that our energy needs to be engaged with expertise. In this leela, very interesting, the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're working together, they're cooperating, they're passing these pots of water back and forth, right? Sometimes the pots get broken, they get new pots, but they're all cooperating together, giving their full energy in order to facilitate the cleaning of the Gandicha temple. Right? That full energy is so important. You know, I was abroad. It was a youth retreat that we were doing. And I was feeling for the youth. I was thinking, in this day and age, right, to be Krishna conscious, it's work. You know, because you have Maya coming at you from literally every angle, right? She's on your television, she's on your mobile phone, you know, wherever you turn, she's on your watch, you know, whatever it is. And so it's like, how does someone make it through? You know, you have to feel for the youth. It's like, it's tough. You know, there's an epidemic of all kinds of negative things that people become exposed to, and they're being now exposed to it at a younger age than in previous generations, right? Because unfortunately, every form of Maya is accessible on the internet, right? Every form. So what's the strategy that can help us move, whether young or old? And that is the engagement of our energy. Everyone has some energy. The question isn't the energy that we have, right? The question is the energy that we engage in service. When we do not engage our energy, our passion, whatever we have, when it's not engaged in devotional service, it becomes an opening for Maya service. So I was thinking with the youth especially, it's so important to just be busy, right? Be busy, be actively engaged in service, right? Don't leave the schedule open, right? Because if you don't write your schedule, or if you don't let Krishna write your schedule, trust me, Maya will definitely write your schedule for you, right? Right? She'll have you working morning till evening. And it's just going to be like that. So the energy needs engagement, especially for youth, because that's a stage of life where there's so much passion. You know, I remember when I was younger, I was just all over the place, right? One country, another country, just crazy. But it was good. I look back and I think, thank God, thank Krishna that I was so busy, right? Because it was protective. So for the devotees, just like this engagement of energy in the cleaning, this has to also be the way that we live our spiritual life. And whatever energy we have, engage it. And if we do that, what happens is whatever we have becomes purified. That is the process. Whatever you bring to Krishna, Krishna purifies it. He raises the quality of it. Right? So sometimes what happens is the difficulty is because we're not realistic. We're in denial about what we are. We're in denial about where we are. And that can lead to so many challenges, right? When we don't recognize, right, I'm in a stage of life where there's just so much passion in the body. Okay, it is what it is, right? Doesn't have to be an issue. Okay, the question isn't whether we have passion or not. The question is, what am I doing with that passion? Do I have an outlet where that passion is being connected to Krishna? Because if it is, that passion will transform over time into goodness. And that goodness over time will transform into Shuddha Sattva. No problem, it's safe. But the passion that doesn't have an engagement, that passion will cause some issue over time. Because passion, when it's left materially without a spiritual engagement, it goes up and then it just goes down. It just goes down. And again, this is what we have to be considering. The last one. So we had this point. Ruchi has to be redefined. I have to redefine what will actually make me happy. Guru Sadhu Shastra will help me redefine. Experiences and realizations will help me redefine that. It is understood that the body of the pure devotee is spiritualized. Therefore, not just what's going on inside them, but even their physical presence has a spiritualizing effect. It's so important to understand that. Therefore, the association that we keep, that's one factor. And then how receptive we are to that association, that's another factor. And that receptivity is not something that happens in the moment. The receptivity to good association is something that we cultivate at every single moment in our lives. So the lifestyle I lead actually affects how I'm able to receive the blessings and the benefit of devotees, especially advanced devotees. Now, where is that idea from, right? Prabhupada explains in one purport that one cannot be wrapped in attention, right? And unless, does anyone remember what Prabhupada says? Unless what? He talks about this, I think it's in the purport to first canto of Bhagavatam, right? One cannot be wrapped in hearing and chanting unless basically one leads a clean life. You see? If one leads a clean life, then one's mind, and Prabhupada is touching upon this here, one's mind becomes pacified. Have you noticed that in Kali Yuga, our minds tend to be a bit more disturbed? Anyone notice that, or is it just me? Absolutely. Yeah. This is the point. The mind is actually coming from the mode of goodness. If the mind is hit by lower modes, it doesn't matter what goes on, the mind won't be peaceful. Right? It's a very, very different ideology to the ideology that you get every day on the internet. The ideology on the internet is if you just get what you want, if your desires are fulfilled, you'll be happy. No. Desire, material desire, is like a boil. You scratch it, it becomes inflamed. Right? So when you scratch it and it becomes inflamed, it will never leave you alone. You'll be a slave of that material desire. It will spawn other desires. Huh? It will never leave you alone. So the attachment will cause suffering. There's an interesting story of a miser. And this miser had a lot of wealth. So what did he do? He buried the wealth in a hidden spot, right, of land. Right? He just buried it. And every day, he'd just look around to make sure no one's watching. And then he'd dig up his wealth just to observe it and make sure it's still there. Right? He did this every day. One day a thief discovered where that wealth was. And the thief stole the miser's wealth. Now you can imagine how heartbroken the miser was. My wealth is gone. It was almost like my baby, right? My wealth is gone. He was absolutely heartbroken, distraught. One wise man walked by and saw what was going on. And the wise man said to the miser, he said, why are you upset? And the miser explained to him, I had this wealth. It was there. I'd accumulated it for a long period of time. And it was stolen by a thief. And I'm heartbroken. And the wise man said, but I don't understand why you're heartbroken. He said, the wise person said to the miser, he said, what you should do is you should just bury a stone in the ground and just imagine it's your wealth, because you didn't do anything with your wealth anyway. Right? You didn't do anything with your wealth. It was underground. You didn't do anything with it anyway. And when he told the miser that, the miser had the realization that actually it wasn't the wealth being lost. What had really broken his heart was his attachment to it. What had really broken his heart was the fact that he was attached to it. The suffering came from his attachment. It wasn't the thing itself, it was his attachment to it. Does that sound familiar to anyone? When I was coming to Krishna consciousness, there was a book I was reading. And the book was a story, it was a fictional story. It was about a guru who meets, it's about a student who meets his guru at a petrol station. Right? You know, which is, you know, like as you do, right? As you do. So the guru, so the student meets his guru at the petrol station. And in this particular story, the guru tells his student a story. And he tells him about a construction site. And, you know, the builders are there and they're doing the building work. And every day at lunchtime, they have their lunch. And one of the builders, every lunchtime, he complains. He starts complaining, you know, oh my God, you know, oh, you know, jam sandwiches again. I hate jam sandwiches. And then the next day it's like, you know, cheese on toast. Oh, it's disgusting. I can't stand it. And all the other builders are getting sick of it. Every day he's complaining about his lunch. Every day. And so one day one of the builders just says to him, look, what's wrong with you? If you don't like the food, why don't you just tell your wife to make you something else? And the builder says to that, so the person who said that to him, the builder looks at him blankly, and he said, wife? He said, what wife? I make my own sandwiches. Now, we laugh about it, but actually, we're in a similar situation. I was at a retreat with His Holiness Chandramouli Maharaj earlier this year, and I was explaining that our so-called enemies are our previous incarnations. Our so-called enemies are our previous incarnations. The people who so-called giving us a hard time, I don't know why they're doing it, because I'm wonderful, right? They are our previous incarnations. The reason why they're able to give us a hard time is because at some point in a previous life, we were like that. So we're getting back what we give. We made our own sandwiches. Huh? We made our own sandwiches. And if we understand that, it gives us a tremendous amount of power. Huh? It gives us a tremendous amount of power. It gives us a tremendous amount of power to forgive. Huh? To understand, yes, this is something I've signed up. That same domino effect. In a previous life, I did something. I flipped a switch. I didn't understand the full ramifications of that behavior. But the ramifications of that behavior that I've engaged in the previous life are now coming back to me. Just like Chitraketu. Right? When his son dies, he gets the blessing to bring the soul back into the body. Right? And what does his son say to him? Right? Chitraketu says to the son, he said, look, it's me, it's your father. And he says, father, the son says, father, what father? He said, I've had so many fathers in so many lifetimes. And then he says, in fact, in a previous life, I was your enemy. Right? I just took birth as your son just so I could die early just to cause you to suffer. Ouch. We make our own sandwiches. So moving through this anatta nivritti, number one, bhakti ruchi has to be redefined. Has to be redefined. Number two, we will make progress by the association we keep. You see, this is the difficulty we have, to be very frank. We can have so many communities in form, but not necessarily communities in substance. The same theme, subtle and gross. Community in form means that there's so many people here. Community in form. Community in substance means that there's deep relationship. Right? Because community means communication. Community means communion. Community means people that you can trust to reveal your heart to. So when we have situations where behavior is bad, or there's duplicity, right? People say one thing and then do something else. It really messes up. It affects the bhakti of the community. Because then the open-hearted exchanges, the real honesty and openness, where we can say, oh, I'm struggling with this, and then someone says, it's okay, what can I do to help you? These very powerful, sweet exchanges of bhakti, which empower us to move through anatta nivritti, they become disabled. Huh? What happens in a society, whether it's a spiritual or material society, where there is not a high trust culture, it will create a survival mentality. Survival mentality means I can't trust anyone, each bhakta for themselves. Right? That's what it creates. So it's especially important that leadership care. And it's especially important that leadership are not political. Right? It's especially important that leadership are transparent. I mean, of course, sometimes things are confidential, that I'm not talking about. But that there's open sharing wherever possible. And therefore, there's a communication that this person, this devotee, has our best interests at heart. And then we go from community in form to community in substance. Now, and not to say that it's not already there. There will be community, there'll be devotees, even within any community who have close relationships, and that's good. The more that goes on, the more one is able to accelerate through anatta nivritti, right? Because one is able to be honest about their challenges without feeling shame and without feeling material judgment. There will be judgment. There's a difference between judgment and there's a difference between material judgment and spiritual judgment. In these verses, prior to this verse, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has actually explained that he would tell people, some of the devotees off, right? The ones who were cleaning really well, he would appreciate them. And the ones who weren't cleaning so well, he would chastise them. But it's interesting. It was explained that he did it without any grudge, which is very, very important. In my work, we train leaders and we do so much training on how to give feedback and how to receive feedback. Because every single one of us have blind spots. One, one manager was telling the class, it's very clever, because everyone knows that sometimes people who are your senior, you don't want to tell them certain things, right? Because if I say, you know, if I say that your singing of Kirtan gives me a headache, right? It could be problematic in the community, right? Like that. So one of the managers said that he told the class, he said, in order to get honest feedback from the people who I lead, when I speak to them on a one-to-one, I'll ask them, just by the way, how did the rest of the team feel about the way that I did X? Right? Just to make it non-confrontational. And he said that people would say things like, you know, I thought your presentation was fantastic. I think the rest of the team just thought you talked a bit too much about yourself, you know, like that. And it was very, very interesting because the moment you make it indirect, that there's no sense of confrontation, so much more comes. Whenever we make a situation where people feel that they can be open and honest, so much comes. So much comes. So this community in form, the more it becomes community in substance, the more there's deep, loving exchanges, real exchanges, supportive exchanges, the faster everyone grows. And not just because of the results of the blessings, the insight, the realization, the encouragement that comes, but it's because it makes the devotional life so sweet. Again, this point about ruchi taste, you have these relationships in the devotional communities where they're really sweet. You know these people really love you, right? And whatever happens, they're there for you, and when you're successful, they're sharing your successes, right? And when you have a challenge or difficulties, they're there supporting you through the difficulties. It's so sweet. It's so sweet that everyone wants to be part of that community. Everyone. And it leaves such a deep samskar. It leaves such a deep impression. What we will see over many years, I'll just maybe end on this point. What we'll see over many years and what we've seen already is that there are certain things in our teachings which are sometimes hard to digest. Some things are hard to digest. Hard to believe, hard to grapple with. If you look carefully, what you'll find is how people deal with those challenging situations, whether it's shastric or otherwise, is actually due to the kind of emotional, spiritual life that they have. In other words, let's say that you go through a challenge or you come across something philosophically which you find hard to digest, but you have a group of very loving devotees who are around you, encouraging you, explaining things to you, cheering you on. That emotional life that you have, it actually changes the way that you see whatever you're reading. That emotional life that you have, it changes the way that you see whatever you're challenged by. Because it's not challenge. That's what completely wrong. It's not the philosophy. That's completely wrong. It's the context within which you see the challenge. It's the context within which you see the philosophy. You see the point? That's what's really going on in the life of the devotees. Everything is context specific, right? You go through a challenge, but all the devotees are there for you. They're all encouraging you. They're all telling you how much they love and appreciate you. They're all telling you how much they're there for you. Because of the strength of the context of love, the challenge actually goes like this. It becomes small relative to the love that you're experiencing. But you go through that same challenge alone. You go through that same challenge thinking that there's no one there for you. No one cares. That same challenge, which could be this size, it actually becomes amplified. So our spiritual life is context specific. It's a really important thing to understand. It's not the challenge, it's the challenging context. Just like this, during the pandemic, some people, when everything was closed down, they were okay because their context was they already had some resources saved. So yes, we can't work, or this is closed down, that's closed down, but we can manage. We have something. Others, their context was very, very different. Now it's how the hell am I going to pay the bills? Right? So it's the same pandemic. Same pandemic, different context. So if we understand these points, the context within which we go through these stages of devotion is absolutely essential. So key lessons. Number one, our ruchi has to be redefined. Number two, association accelerates enough for better or worse. And number three, we have to engage our energy with full expertise. Right? Whatever we don't give to Krishna is open and vulnerable to the material energy. Okay. So thank you very much. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jani Tai Gaura Premanandi. Hari Hari Paul. Do we have any question or comment? I can see a hand up. Krishna Saka.
Thank you very much, Prabhu. On the point that you mentioned about redefining Ruchi, for myself, I've kind of noticed I might have an understanding of something or a philosophical basis for something, but I've not necessarily experienced a Ruchi or a higher taste. So I have knowledge, but I don't have the full experience. So you're kind of in this middle ground of no man's land of, well, I can't actually give something up, even though I know something is bad for me because I don't have an experience of something that's better. So I wondered if you had any insight what to do.
Yeah, it's a great question. I actually meant to address this, actually. We have to be patient, first of all, because the change takes time. And a form of self-induced suffering is when I don't have a realistic timeline within which to expect to see certain outcomes, right? So it's just like if a woman is pregnant and she's just become pregnant and then she's in distress because it's a month and there's no baby, right? But someone with knowledge understands, no, it's a 9-month process. Don't worry, you'll get there, right? So the first thing is we have to have that understanding that it will take a certain degree of time to remove certain anartas. Actually, anarta nivritti goes on not just through anarta nivritti, it goes on all the stages. But when we say anarta nivritti, we mean a stage where major cleaning takes place, where certain key things are uprooted on a gross and possibly, and generally also on a subtle level. So what can help us carry through is that, yes, we're in the middle space. There are certain aspects of our devotional practices we can get a lot from immediately. Why is it so many people come to Krishna consciousness through kirtan? It's because they sit down in the kirtan and they actually feel blissful. They may still be doing all kinds of sinful activity, but they sit down. It's like, wow, hold on, I can actually feel something here. Right? That's why the kirtan is so powerful, because it can give immediate taste. Right? And not just kirtan, association, the right association can give immediate taste. Some people can get taste from the philosophy. I've got answers. There's one devotee who my wife met when she was at Govardhan Eco Village. And this devotee is from England, so they've been in touch. And I remember I was on Harinam a few weekends ago, and I saw this devotee. And this devotee is like, if you know when people are like new to Krishna consciousness, like, wow, oh my God, wow. Everything's like that kind of mood, you know, like that. You know they see someone, wow, you're chanting, oh my God, you know, like that. It's just completely, and the pupils are huge, everything is like, you know, go to, wow, everything's like that. So in that honeymoon period, everything can be so amazing. But also, I'll just touch upon this now. It's very, very interesting. It's also the state of the consciousness or the heart. The more the heart is undisturbed, you can directly experience all kinds of additional things in spiritual life. The chanting's actually always blissful. But when the heart is disturbed, the actual nature of something can't be experienced so clearly. Because it's just like if you have a broken mirror, you can't see the proper, you can't see the reality clearly through that broken mirror. It's distorted. So one of the things that we should be doing as we practice Krishna consciousness is try and live a lifestyle that's actually healthy. Because the more your mind is in an undisturbed state, you chant, you can immediately feel, wow, there's the taste here. And it's not even kirtan, it can be kirtan, it can be japa. If the mind's less disturbed, you go before the deities, you can immediately perceive something. It's actually due to what the nature of our consciousness. So our taste is also to do with the instrument that detects what's going on in Krishna consciousness. You know, so that's really, really important as well. But yes, what happens ultimately is we should try to find enough things which give us impetus, motivation and taste that help us to balance the areas where we may not have taste so far. And we should have that patience. Patience with endeavor. And those together will actually help us to move through. Is that okay? Okay. Thank you. I saw a hand from Prayojana, and then just tell me whoever the organizers are, tell me when we need to stop, because I know that people need to take breakfast as well. Okay.
According to the natural instruction, it's text-free. It's an anishchaya daya.
It's karma, pravartanat.
Oh, thank you. I'm just quoting now from the Nectar of Instruction, text 3. It says, Utsahan nishchayat daryat tatat karma pavartanat sangati agat sato vritti sabdahir bhakti prasidhyate. Translation. There are 6 principles favorable for the execution of pure devotional service. 1. Being enthusiastic. 2. Endeavoring with confidence. 3. Being patient. 4. Acting in accordance with the regulative principles such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna. Abandoning association of non-devotees. That's heavily what you were talking about. Yeah. So, following the footsteps of the previous acharyas, these are the 6 principles undoubtedly assure that a complete success and pure devotional service. And just one thing is to quote from your Guru Raj. It's from here. He says, think of the person you love most and aspire to treat everyone with that same quality of love. And so it's all about association, but also the association which we have in our mind.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Prabhu. I think we'll stop there just because I'm conscious that people need to leave and take prasadam. But thank you so much. And yes, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shishi Gonitai ki jai, Jainitai Gaura Premananda.